or three?
Continue. Okay. Sweet.
Yeah, now it's going.
Okay,
sorry.
Now it's you, Steph. So we'll repeat that one once. Now let him share the one being catechized, is the word, with the one catechizing in all good things. Don't be deceived. God not is mocked. That which, if should, you could, literally, should sow a man, so that which a man should sow, this also he will reap. It's kind of funny. So, in contemporary society, we have. Hey, I'll send you an email, okay?
Yeah, dude. I'm recording everything he says, man.
Because he's awesome.
So goofy.
Yeah, dude. You spit state truth. That's all you gotta do.
Like if you're looking in, I don't know what just happened. If you're looking in contemporary society, one of the things that we've done.
Dude, you should sit down and be our friend.
Joining me.
Or it comes to talk.
Hombres y brazos. No, dude, we got plenty of room on this chair here.
Yeah. I need a stretcher, you know.
Okay, we need to hurry. We need to hurry.
Yeah, we gotta hurry. All right.
Yeah, dude.
So one of the things that we see is that in what, like, having de-Christianized lots of things, we realize, hey, we don't have a foundation for morality anymore, and that's kind of a bummer. And so what do? We'll get karma. Let's import that, and we'll say karma is good. And so
we take that from, you know, that which you referenced me so.
Well, here's the thing. We try to take that from a foreign source. We say, well, this is kind of a general thing, and if you do something good will happen to you, something bad will happen to you. That works. That seems like a pretty good foundation for morality. So we don't actually most of us really believe that, but we can maybe believe that when we'd like to. And so it's this kind of general thing that's, you know, at least in these parts, especially in the Bay Area, is totally imported heavily. If you hang out with secular folks, they'll invoke karma all the time. Well, the thing is, the base thing that's there is actually legit from a biblical sense. Because that's what Paul literally just says here. And so there is, I think rather than being something where we need to necessarily go and kind of poke it into people's eyes and just be like, dude, you're lame, just kind of trying to grab this idea out of nowhere while not appropriating the system from which it comes. So it's not like you're actually saying that the rest of Eastern spirituality or the rest of Hindu spirituality, for instance, is binding for us. Like, what do you think about Dalits? Like, what do you think about Brahmins? What do you think about, you know, what do you think about suti, for instance? What do you think about, so suti is, you know, husband dies, and if the husband dies, then there's a funeral pyre, and you're supposed to throw the wife on the funeral pyre, because the wife isn't supposed to live. So Eastern spirituality, right? So Hinduism. So we're appropriating from that. So you're saying that Hinduism has some sort of binding authority. There's something that's true that's there. So sweet, let's bring in some suti. Let's see how that goes. So you can go and poke into people's eyes and be like, yeah, don't really know if this has as firm a foundation as you. Yeah, as you might be letting on at this point.
I don't really feel like burning my wife.
Yeah. Well, she won't be your wife anymore. You'll be dead. the thing, though,
still.
I don't know if we necessarily. I don't know if that is the most helpful approach, because I think that for that truth that's there, that and I think it is fair to call it a truth, because Paul is saying something that's directly analogous, if not word for word the same thing. For that truth that's there.
Oh, dude, I have it backwards. I had it forwards.
That was delightful.
Dude,
we're still friends. I think it's legitimate to go and to engage with people where they're at and saying, what you're doing is you're saying that there is some transcendent foundation for justice. You're saying that in the end, might doesn't just make right. In the end, there's something real that's out there. And when there is something and you know it's true and you know it's good, and you go and you do that thing, that's something that has value beyond itself. And when there's, when, and conversely, when somebody is doing something they know is not true, that they know is a lie, and they continue in that anyway, there's, in some way, there's something transcendent that they're violating, that they're going against. Insofar as that goes, you can say, dude, 100% affirmation. Unqualified affirmation. Now, the where that goes is where it starts to get fuzzy. Is where do you go in the details of that? Because even if you say somebody, okay, you know you believe in this karma thing. By what is it substantiated? Where is this more than just a nice idea? If you actually want to hold people to this, why should somebody listen to what you're saying? What proof do you have of karma? That's maybe a good way of putting it. What's the proof that you have? And it's difficult at that point because most people in the Bay Area, at least, aren't going to go and say, oh, it's because Hindu spirituality is authoritative for us. And if they do say that, then... Yeah, you don't necessarily want to say it, like, throw it in their face, but you might want to say, like... You know, perhaps we could have a conversation about this because somebody tells me that you're not appropriating this wholesale.
Just what you like.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're just taking the things that you think are, that you like, basically what you're saying is, I myself am authoritative. I'm the authoritative one, and something is authoritative insofar as I give it authority.
So that,
but then that's just really saying.
Credits karma even more if they're saying, like, well, I'm...
Exactly, exactly. It becomes a matter of personal preference at that point. And somebody could say, oh, well, you know, I don't happen to find that particular part of Hindu spirituality to be true for me. So it's nice that it's true for you, but since it's not true for me in the same way, I'm still going to jack your car. Because I don't think that anything is going to happen. I think that I can exercise power over you, and it doesn't really matter what you or anything else thinks about it. So if you keep saying, what is the foundation of this? In the end, what's the foundation for this justice that you believe in? It's really difficult to find an answer for that. As a Christian, and what Paul does, Paul points to one particular event, one particular point in history, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that's what it always comes down to. It's like, and I think this is a testament of the church, you know, as well. It's because this has happened, because of this one thing, we know that all of this are true. This is the confirmation, and the pouring out of the Spirit following that is the down payment that God gives us. Literally, what the word means, it's the down payment that God gives us of the coming future. So there is something that you point to that's not just an idea. It's an actual event. It's an actual something happening, and that's what it's tied to. And if you look. You know, if you look in the early fathers, this is what's said all over the places. This is what he points to when he says, like, if you look in like Gregory of Nyssa, for instance, there's a spot where he says, he's talking about the resurrection, and he says, for if there is no resurrection of the dead, if this doesn't actually happen, if what we're saying about Christ isn't actually real, there's no resurrection, this is all you see, then one saying will prevail amongst all men. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. That's all it is. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. If there is no resurrection, but because of Christ's resurrection, we know what is true for all men. We know all this stuff in a way that's not just, hey, these are nice thoughts. Something has actually happened. And even that in itself is a scandal, because you're saying that one particular thing that happened in one particular point in history in one little place has bearing for all humanity. And the answer to that point is yes. Like, there's no way to escape it. Like, that's what the answer is. But it is a real thing. It's not just a fun idea. It's not just a kind of half-hearted appropriation of some, you know, other system somewhere that we really don't recognize as being binding upon us. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that when we're looking at this kind of conversations with people, I think we probably do well to do more affirming than denying in those things, because what people are searching for is at its root a Christian thing.
Yeah.
that which a man reaps, he will sow. That there is some sort of justice that's there. It's a desire that God's put in all of us for there to be some sort of transcendent justice that's there. Some real right and wrong. And insofar as that goes, the New Testament absolutely affirms that. I mean, as does, you know, the Old Testament as well. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Totally. So it's a cool thing to hang on to, because I don't know, as a basic thing, it's totally there. Now, does Revelation go beyond that? Absolutely. Because if you actually get into, like, just saying that doesn't necessarily get to forgiveness. It doesn't necessarily get to reconciliation. It doesn't necessarily get to new creation. And so what Revelation does here is it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that which a man reaps, he will sow. But it's still bedrock. It's still foundational. So if you look at what Paul's doing in Romans 2, that's it. He's basically laying out the exact same thing. He's saying, this is foundational. This is bedrock. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not where the story ends, but it is where it begins. So again, verse 7. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. For that which if a man should reap, this also he will, or should sow, sorry, this also he will reap. That the one sowing to the flesh, or to the flesh of him, from the flesh will reap corruption, I think is the best way to translate that. Corruption, I think, is a good way. But the one sowing unto the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Now, the good doing, not let us... That's a good way to say this. I think that what we usually do is let us not lose heart. Like, let us not lose heart in doing good. What does it give us here? Like, lose enthusiasm, become tired, become afraid. So, literally, the good doing, let us not lose heart. For... in time,
yeah,
we will reap to one's own, if not losing heart. If we don't, or if sorry, if not, if we don't give up. The verb there, ekulamenoi, is become like becoming weary, passing out.
This is what I texted you a couple weeks ago.
This is what you texted.
Dude,
literally, he texted me this verse.
It's so good. I remember actually at group. This is probably 4.5 years ago, I was at a group at Daniel Fury's and just being totally rocked by this verse. And so, it was so encouraging. Again, basic affirmation of that principle that's there. That basic right and wrong. That's good. I think that's absolutely good news. If you're looking, like we kind of what we talked about in the Romans class, when we talked about For God's justice, God's anger is being revealed against all unrighteousness. Is that good news or bad news? I think that's fundamentally good news. If you're in a system, like a theological kind of sort of time and place where, you know, there doesn't seem to be any sort of basis for right and wrong. Really, the gods are strong. They're going to do whatever we want to do. So we better get as much strength as we can so we can do whatever we want to do too. If you're saying that, no, where there is injustice, God's anger is revealed against it. I think that's fundamentally good news. And this is, again, this seems like basic building block stuff, but this is what Paul is choosing to end with. So having said, hey, this stuff from Torah, this stuff from Zazu, isn't binding for all you guys, yet this part is. This fundamental thing, these fundamental pieces, these are eternal. So, does that work some? I've used this analogy before when we've talked about what does the Torah do, and you've got promises to Abraham. You've got 430 years. You have the people coming out of Egypt. You have their great apostasy. So everybody, they make the golden calf. It's a huge, huge deal. What do? I think a good way to understand what the law is doing, so what the Torah is doing, is like a booster rocket. So if you think of what a booster rocket does, a booster rocket is meant, you've got a rocket. You got the little space shuttle guy, and you got this booster rocket attached to it. And you want to get the people to space. And so in order to get the people from this place to this place right here, you need this booster rocket. And so the booster rocket goes, and it does this cool thing. It makes you go in a certain direction. You're clearly going in one direction the whole way. You're not really going left and right, anything like that. You are hemmed in. You're going straight up. That is it. You're going up, you're going up, you're going up. And then as soon as you get to the place you're intending to go to, what happens? Booster rocket runs out, detaches, and sort of just wanders off into the netherworld. Like it's, you know, wanders to Uranus or something like that. Like it goes off. It did the purpose that it was intended to do. It got you to the point. And then it's gone. And then you're in space and you're flying all around in space and it's neat. I think it's a pretty good way if you're looking on kind of the timeline that Paul has in his head. I don't think he was necessarily thinking booster rocket at the time. But I think, you know, had he been in a time and, you know, in a day and age where there were booster rockets, I think that he would give some basic affirmation to that.
Yeah.
You know? I think he would say, this is intended for a time and a place for a purpose beyond itself. The purpose isn't the booster rocket. And you can say exactly, and you might say that one of the critiques that, you know, that both Jesus and Paul would have of the Jewish establishment at the time is saying, hey, the booster rocket's the really big thing. This is really the big fundamental thing. Saying, no, this is meant for time and place. You know what? That time and place is ending right now. Now, there's still things, there's still, it's not like, hey, this is the end of the story. There's still underlying important things that are here. But as far as this thing goes, this thing is meant for this time, this place. And now that we've arrived at the destination that it was intended to get us to, we just don't need it in the same way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of a way of looking at it. So, verse 10. Now, therefore, as we have time, or as time we have, let us work the good to all, or to all people, especially to the household of Pistis, the household of, you know, yeah, and you can say, here you can say, when it's the household of Pistis, you can say, I think you can have it in the sense of, like, the household of the, again, the content of the faith. The household of faith being the church. The household where the faith of Jesus Christ is preached. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, see with what large letters to you I wrote in my own hand, as many as are desiring... this is okay. So the verb here is ye prosopesai. So you have ye, which is good, prosopesai. So you have prosopon, which is face. So like face or appearance. So to have a good appearance is probably the best way to say it. So as many as are desiring to have a good appearance, again, it has to do with the outside thing in the flesh, these are compelling you to be circumcised only in order that for the cross of Christ they will, I think literally, they will, oh boy, they should not be persecuted. It's probably the best way to do it. They should not be persecuted. Here, again, you have, I think a good way of analogizing this is looking at Ephesians and then saying, in Ephesians, what the cross of Christ does is it breaks down the barrier wall between Jew and Gentile. You have the temple priests, you have the court of the Gentiles. From here on, nobody can go. You have to be a Jewish person and access God beyond this. And what Paul is saying is that Christ by his cross has broken down this wall, which is a huge scandal to the Jews. But Christ has broken this down. We should go through that passage at some point. Because that is a neat one. It's super cool.
Later, I'd love to hear your spiel on that.
I just think it's great. For neither the ones being circumcised themselves the Torah are keeping, but they're desiring you to be circumcised in order that in your flesh they should boast. So, again, let's think about it like this. So the boast of the Jews at this point is, hey, we're part of the cool kids club. we're part of the ones that we have these signs. It's like we have the secret tattoo, which makes it, we can sit at the cool table. And what are we doing when we're going out? Are we going and are we persuading people to worship the true God by our ministry towards widows and orphans? That's not what they're talking about here. Their boast is because they got other people circumcised too. Because they're going and they're getting other people with the secret tattoo that gets so they can, you know, so they can sit the cool kids. Hey, we got more cool kids. Hey, they joined our secret club.
That means we're cooler.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's not, again, I think you can see what's the force of their boast there. So, but to me, may it never be to boast in anything, or to myself boast in anything except the cross of the Lord of us, Jesus Christ, through whom, to me, the world is crucified and I to the world. I feel like we could probably pause on that and talk for forever, but I'm just gonna keep going. I think you could say maybe that literally this, the way that Paul sees the whole world, everything is through the cross. And in that sense, I think you can look at what Luther is doing, and that's, I mean, I feel like there's oftentimes in going through Galatians through this where we come to spots in Luther and we say, dude, we just don't know what you're doing here. This is one where I think that his, if you read what he says about it, I think it's often really refreshing. He has a lot of good stuff to say, in that the cross is often at the center, of his thinking. So perhaps we can at least say we can have some affirmation there, kind of what Paul is saying here. I think he appropriates a lot of. For neither circumcision anything is, again, here we're doing the same thing that we did in, what is it, 5:6, so neither circumcision or uncircumcision anything, but faith being energized through love. Here he does the same thing, but he goes and he says it in a different way. So, for neither circumcision anything is, nor uncircumcision, but new creation. This is the thing that matters. So it's not whether you're a Jew, it's not whether you're a Gentile, it's whether you're a new creation. This is the category that matters. And again, here you can see him just continuing the conversation with Peter and saying, look, this is the fundamental thing. We can't play by these old rules anymore. We can't act like that time, like we're back in that time anymore, because something cataclysmic has happened. If new creation is actually happening, this has to be what defines our boundaries. It can't be any of the other stuff. That's in even a little bit of that yeast, like Paul says, even a little bit of that yeast will spoil everything. It has to be new creation or not new creation.
So it's like just because people from James are here doesn't mean you can't eat.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because they're a new creation the same way that we're a new creation. And as many are, and as many by this, literally, by this canon, by this measure, are establishing, or are walking, you could say, peace upon them, and mercy, and upon the Israel of God. Now you could spend a lot of time on that, upon the Israel of God. I think the best way to understand this is that he sees the church as, to say the new Israel isn't, has some bad connotations, because it has a connotation of that story is totally over, and this is a totally new and thing, a totally new thing in discontinuity, which is kind of the problem that you have with some views of Old Covenant, New Covenant. I think that what he sees is the new Israel as a reconstituted Israel. Again, think of what Jesus is doing. He goes and he calls 12 disciples. Well, who calls 12, first of all? God's the one that calls 12. He goes and he calls 12. You have the 12 tribes of Israel that he says, That's what God does. And so in that one, you have, I mean, you kind of have the, wait, who's this that calls 12 tribes again? Or who's this that goes and calls 12 and says, hey, we're starting something with you guys, with you 12. That's God that does that. So one, you have a pretty cool thing if you want to understand the identity of who Christ is. But two, if you want to understand what the church is, look at the 12 that Christ goes and picks. He's picking Jews. He doesn't go and get something that's totally, oh no, forget you guys, we're doing something totally different. And if you look at from those 12 expanding, it's Jew plus Gentile, Jew plus Gentile. So there's absolutely some overlap between Old Israel and New Israel, but not all of it, which corresponds, I mean, if you want to get into this more, look at Paul in Romans 9-11. He says, look, some of Israel is part of this, but not all of it, because this is what the Old Testament always said. There's going to be a seed, there's going to be a remnant that's going to continue on. But just because you're a Jew, just because that you have, you know, just because you have circumcision, doesn't mean that God is going to go and just say, oh, sweet, clearly you have the secret tattoo, you can sit at the cool kids table. That's not the way that God works. He looks at the heart, not the outside things. Does that work?
Yeah.
So here, I think the Israel of God, I think he means that fundamentally as the church. But even a strong church on one side, Jews on the other side distinction doesn't work. For no other reason, Paul's a Jew himself. I mean, and he's writing to people that are under these influences. I mean, you can see there's not like a, hey, sort of a firm transfer of one to the other. Does it work?
Yeah.
The rest, what is kapus? How does that work? How the heck would you translate that?
What verse are you on?
So, 17. So this we're in the last two verses, so we don't have to worry a whole lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Does it get out at 5? Is that right?
A little after, I think.
Okay, cool. Then we'll go get them like right from here.
Cool. So,
no, we're coming back for dinner.
They just have to do that real quick.
I have to grab my brother from work, and Luke drove me out here.
Not yet.
I could go get him. So you're nice. You're very kind for offering.
You are very kind. I like that about you. Sorry. I didn't mean to pet you like that either. I just couldn't help myself. So the rest, this is grammatically super hard. Nobody let him offer toils to me. Let him offer troubles to me. So I think we usually say in English, don't let him be a trouble anymore. Like, for I, the stigmata, this is the literal thing. Does anybody know what a stigmata is? So Saint Francis, he gets at towards the end of his life, he gets the stigmata. It's something that he's been praying for, and he receives the stigmata. And what the stigmata is literally the wounds of Christ. So in his hands and in his feet, he receives the wounds of Christ where there are nails that were given. It's called the stigmata.
What?
Crazy talk. And it's, you know, it's super interesting. If you do research on this, there's been other people that have prayed for the same thing, to participate in the suffering of Christ in the same way, to be able to feel his wounds. And I don't know if you, it's not something that I've done like tons of research on, but I have heard from other people where it's like you can see other documented examples of this in history. But the most famous one is Saint Francis. It's, yeah, that's definitely...
The stigmata is to ask for the wounds of Christ.
Yeah, so the stigmata are the wounds of Christ.
Okay.
Now, here, I don't think that he's necessarily... Paul was meaning, like, exactly the things in here. But he is bearing... It's because what you have here is, for I, the stigmata, so the wounds of Christ in my flesh, or in my body, I am bearing. So, I think by that specifically, I think that he probably means... Hey,
hi.
I know you.
What's up?
Yeah. So I think by that, not necessarily like these right here and on your feet. I think it's, you know, you have Paul saying over and over, hey, I've had the 40 lashes minus one.
Yeah.
You know, over and over, you know, like 5 times because of Christ. So I think he's saying the wounds in general, not specifically these ones, but. That term itself, stigmata, is super interesting. If you actually want to see what happens with it later in history. So he's basically saying, look, I've been beaten to hell because of this, so don't let anybody get me in trouble over it. This isn't like this isn't like a sort of like, hey, fun, you know, like, let's maybe some of the circumcision stuff, maybe some not of this. Like, I bear in mind, and he says, if you look where he says he suffered at the hands of the Jews. Why would the Jews do this to him? It's over this very stuff. debates over these very things and saying that these Jewish particularities aren't binding and saying that Zazu is sort of done with and saying, yeah, the booster rocket, we're in space now. And that's kind of goes off to the side. It's that which is really strikes fundamentally to the identity of the Jewish people, especially when you're Paul and you are like super top Pharisee guy. So you already have the following that you have. You have the authority that you have. And then you go and you're like, wait a second, you're doing what? So he's basically saying, look, five times I've had the 40 lashes minus one over this. Don't let anybody talk to me about this anymore. It's a good way of saying it. The grace of the Lord of us, Jesus Christ, with the spirit of y'all, brothers. Amen. That's it.